is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What does it take to spin a good yarn, to hold an audience in suspense hanging on every word? Some of the nation's best storytellers will be in Paris, Kentucky from May 10th through 12th for the annual Paris Story Fest. Today, we're going to get some expert advice about what makes a good story, and our guests will share a bit of their art with us. Joining me now are storytellers Andy Offit-Irwin and Donna Washington. Thank you both so much for being here.
Hey, Lucy. Thank you for inviting us.
We're delighted to be here, Lucy. Thanks.
Yeah. Stories can be passed down. They can be totally fabricated. They can be folklore. Donna, where do your stories come from?
Well, I specialize in international folklore. So I learned most of my stories actually by listening to other storytellers. Though the best thing in the world is to go into the library and sit there in 392.8 and just pull stuff off the shelves.
You know you're a regular when you can shout out the Dewey Decimal Air place there. How about you, Andy? Where do you get your best stories?
I make stuff up. I was always a liar when I was a kid and would just expound on the things I observed. So I just start making up people in my head. Although I make up fiction, I hope my fiction leads to truth. So even if the facts aren't factual, I hope the truth comes through.
Oh, interesting. Andy, and I don't know whether to even believe what you just said since you told me you were a liar as a kid.
And but that is fair and just of you.
Okay. Well, we'll keep going though. Andy, what are some of your early memories of listening to stories? How did you get the storytelling bug?
Oh man, I was interested in comedy. I've always been interested in comedy, but then I was interested in narrative too, and so that's why I'm usually listed as a humorist as opposed to a comedian. And the difference between a humorist and a comedian is I play in more schools and libraries, and there isn't a 3-drink minimum.
That's fair.
But really, it's my mother was a recreational liar. And I really just picked it up that way. And then I actually started writing it and trying to, you know, come up with a narrative arc for my characters.
Donna, I'd like to get your take on your early memories of storytelling and listening to stories and where you got the bug. But I also want to get your take on this whole liar thing that Andy keeps dropping. I mean, do you think storytellers are liars?
No. Actually, being a liar is a kind of storytelling. So they have contests for liars, but that is a form of the art. And in terms of the way I ended up getting into this is when I was a kid, I had no idea this was a job. I didn't know you could do this for a living. I mean, who would know that? I grew up in a family of 7 kids. My father was a military man. He was in the army. And my mother kept house and did anything she could to entertain 7 children. So there's a lot of stories that come out of my childhood. We were big into stories. My grandparents told us stories, and we also, my parents got us a record player. I had one of those little portable record players, and I must have had 100 records, and they were all stories, and we would just sort of move around the house as a little gang of kids, and we would put records on, and we actually acted out the records. We would also, every now and again on a Saturday morning, we would let my parents sleep in, and we would make breakfast for them, and then we would work out little story skits, and while they were eating breakfast, we would perform for them, because we were a traveling troupe. And then I sort of forgot about a lot of that. I mean, I did theater all the way through high school, but when I got to university, one of my professors, after watching me do a piece of theater, said, "You should be a storyteller." His name is Reeves Collins, and he's actually he's graduating, good Lord, he's retiring from teaching this year. And he said, "You should be a storyteller." And then he spent like 2 years of his life turning me into a storyteller. And when I graduated from university, that's just what I did. So this is the only job I have ever had as a grown-up person.
Wow, shout out to him. He called it,
yeah,
didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
So for 36 years, I've just basically been traveling the world and telling people stories. But I am not a liar.
No.
That's
Donna, I could, yes, Donna is not a liar. No.
not Donna's genre. Donna, no. What's the difference between a me story and a we story?
So This is gets back into personal narrative, which is another genre of story, where you're telling stories from your own life, more or less. The caption that I have is, every story I tell is true except for the parts I make up. And I think that's true of every story, especially personal stories. But the whole point of telling stories is to create community and bring people together. And you do that by telling stories where it's about all of us. They're universal themes, like love or, you know, growing older or sharing things. A me story is a story that is about me. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, it happened to me, and I am a unicorn, and no one else in the world has ever encountered anything like this, and it's just about me. But the truth of listening to a story is, we like stories about us. We like to hear and be able to see ourselves in stories, or people we know or people we love. If you need to spend 20 minutes explaining who your uncle is before you can tell the story, and we have no context for why we should care, we don't care. So the story needs to be something that all of us can embrace. And that doesn't mean you don't have like individual characters in your family that are part of that story, but they need to trend archetypally so that no matter who is in the audience, they can stand up to you and go, that happened to me, or that reminds me of my family. So a we story is a story about all of us. A me story, nobody wants to hear that. If you need a me story, go get some therapy. Don't put it on.
That's very fair. We're talking about stories with two professional storytellers who will be spinning yarns at the upcoming Paris Story Fest in Paris, Kentucky. Andy, you use instruments, song, and whistling in some of your storytelling. Got a little sound from that.
Was a cyclops winking or blinking? How can I read his mood? I wonder what he is thinking. I'm thinking he thinks of me as food. Compared to this giant, I'm a little shrimp. He's putting mascara on his one eye to primp. How can you tell if a snake has a limp? And a cyclops winking or blinking? Oh. Is a cyclops winking or blinking? I just want to leave this cave. And from the way this cavern is stinking, I can tell Polyphemus don't never bathe. I'm wondering how this drama ends. This giant ain't getting no help from his friends. Buddy only pays half for his contact lens. And a cyclops winking or blinking.
Now, what I need to point out for our listeners is that beautiful whistling tone they heard is coming from your head, right?
That's right. It's cheaper than paying a keyboard player.
Fair enough. How did all that become part of your craft?
I've always whistled all my life. I was probably 10 or 11 before I realized not everybody in the world can whistle whatever they want. And then I was doing the singer-songwriter circuit, and you know, I would just start whistling. And Carmen Deedy saw me at Eddie's Attic, which is a music club in Atlanta. And she's a storyteller and a children's book writer. And she said, "You're a storyteller." I said, "Okay, fine." She goes, "No, your song introductions are 4 minutes long, and the song is 2.5 minutes long." But yeah, I just do what I do. It's the easiest explanation. Yeah.
Well, we just heard a little sample from Andy. Donna, let's get a taste for one of your stories. Can you share a little bit with us?
Right now?
Okay. Go, Donna. Come on. Yeah. You can do it.
I don't think of you as somebody who gets Zoom stage fright, but yeah. I could be wrong.
No. All right. Okay. So here's a bit from a piece called The Loathly Lady. That's from the version of From the Canterbury Tales. King Arthur was riding down the road, his heart heavy. His head was forfeit if he could not answer the riddle, when a voice called him from the grass. Good morrow, King Arthur. He looked around, but he didn't see anything. In fact, the only thing by the side of the road was a twisted tree stump. And he was getting ready to ride on when he heard the voice again. It said, Good morrow, King Arthur. And he stopped and he looked and he realized that what he thought was a tree stump was actually a woman. She was short with a twisted back and bandied legs. Her arms were so long, her knuckles scraped the ground. Each of her fingers ended in a long, sharp, black talon. Her face was a mass of warts, each one with its own little frilly protrusion. One of her eyes was up on her forehead and one was down on her cheek. She had a little slit for a nose, and her thin, lipless mouth hung slack, exposing rows of green and brown teeth. And because her lips hung open, a continuous stream of drool ran down her chin and soaked the patched rags that she'd tied together for a dress. Her scalp was scabrous, with little patches of white hair sticking up here and there, but the hair under her arms long and blowing in the wind. And the smell! The smell! But King Arthur had been raised to be chivalrous to women, and this thing loosely qualified as a woman.
Wow. You know, this is radio, but you really painted a picture there. That was amazing. Andy, I want to go to you next. Your Aunt Marguerite makes appearances during your performances sometimes. Can we meet her?
Oh, of course. And she's 85 years old, and she just graduated from medical school. So if you're driving and you start to applaud, please be careful. But my girlfriend, Mary Frances, and I, our husbands have passed on, and we were tired of the Brit Club and the Garden Club, so she and I went back to medical school. Now, I went to Emory. I don't know if y'all have heard of Emory. It wants to be Ivy League, but you and I know it's Kudzu League. But Mary Frances went to the Georgia College of Medicine in Augusta, and there's nothing wrong with that. And we opened up a little clinic there in Andy's hometown of Covington. And we serve two purposes. We're hospice for people who won't admit it, often very conservative people, because the first time they ever heard the word hospice was from Bill Moyers on the PBS. So they think death and dying is a liberal issue. And we're the emergency room for the ashamed, you know, because if you go to the big county hospital, the pink ladies will tell you business. Like Ray McFarland, he was driving one day, and he has the asthma, and he was carrying an albuterol inhaler in his pocket, and he was having an episode, and he took his inhaler and but he had a Sucret in the barrel there.
Oh, no.
And it got caught in his esophagus. It wasn't going to dissolve because it was still in the wrapper. So they came to our little clinic, and we have an emergency lane. When Gene Cannon retired from his Pure Oil station, we bought his air hose bell. So they came into the portico, kang, kang, oh, we have an emergency. Let's go see who it is. Now, Mary Frances, she practices holistic medicines, things you might not read about in the physician's desk reference or the New England Journal. And she went into the kitchen. He was in a bad way. It was awful. And she pulled out her favorite hot sauce. It's called Scorned Woman. And she poured it in a little pill cup, you know, those little paper pill cups, like, you know, like what you get ketchup in if you go to the McDonald's or something like that, you know. Except this was a medical supply, so it's $40. And she poured some of that hot sauce in there, and she said, drink this down. He was healed.
Okay. Aunt Marguerite something. Is that character a testament to the fact, Andy, that our older relatives can be some of our best storytellers?
Oh, of course. That because we have, you know, the long view, right? We've lived a long time. And absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
And Andy,
that's part of what she's about.
I'm going to ask you this question. I don't even know if you'll tell me the truth based on our previous conversation, but do you have an Aunt Marguerite?
I'm nodding my head and I'm saying no.
Okay.
No, her voice is my based on my grandmother, Sally Mae Pickett Cook.
Oh.
But no, my mom was in the hospital, and I started just sort of doing that voice, acted like a nurse, and then I started doing that on stage and went, wait a minute, let's overstate a little bit, let's make her a doctor. And so she has adventures, and then she has characters surrounding her, Mary Frances and her daughter Francine, who lives in Cambridge, who suffers with HDD, humor deficit disorder. And So, yeah, just a string of characters in the community and in her world.
Donna, do you have family members who've ever inspired your stories?
Well, yes. Like I said, I come from a family of seven, and my my father is larger than life, really. So the way I describe him is he's 6'4". He has black belts in judo, karate, hapkido, tensudo, and taekwondo.
Oh, my goodness.
He knows how to use samurai swords and nunchucks, and the army thought it was a fabulous idea to teach him how to shoot rifles. He is the blackest human being I've ever seen in my life. He looks like midnight with eyeballs. And he's got this beautiful tenor voice, unless he's really mad. And then he sounds like, you know, he goes, So I do have a number of stories that feature him as the most terrifying thing in my childhood. But he also shows up in ghost stories because nothing is scarier than he is. It's just, he's just a lot of fun to play with.
Wow. And Donna, you've mentioned a couple times how big your family is. There's an adoption story that's part of all that. Can you just tell us briefly about your family's makeup?
Oh, sure. So I spent a big chunk of my childhood in South Korea, and my parents decided to adopt one child. And they read about these Amerasian children, and in the 70s, there was a lot of issues with them immigrating to America or getting citizenship in either South Korea or America. So my parents find one, and when they go to get him, there's a child who's only been at the orphanage for like a couple of weeks, and he sees my parents and think they look good, and he just gets in the back of our car. And so my parents come out of the orphanage with the child they're planning to adopt, and there's another one with his luggage in our car. And they can't bear to send him back in, so they just brought them both home. So that was six.
That's wonderful. And
they're pretty fabulous people. And then the seventh one, my parents were seeing all this information about this girl who was going to have trouble immigrating, and she really needed to get out of South Korea if she was going to have a life. And my parents thought, oh, we got six kids, what's seven? So they adopted her too.
Wow. Andy, do you prefer telling stories to kids or adults?
My rules are this. Treat children with the respect you give adults, and treat grown-ups with the exuberance that kids crave. So the answer is yes.
How about you, Donna?
It depends.
That's fair. That's
I spend about 90% of my work in schools. Yeah, I work about 90% in schools. I'm someone who really focuses on storytelling and education and brain development and language development and literacy. But I really love telling stories to adults. So the answer is, it depends on who I'm standing in front of.
Fair. That's great. And Donna, what do you think makes for a good story and a good storyteller? What are the ingredients you have to have there?
Well, see, here's kind of a funny thing. It just depends. There are people you would meet and you would think, wow, I bet they're a great storyteller because they just seem really outgoing. And then they stand up and you're like, whoa. And then you have people you're like, whoa, they seem really quiet and introverted. And they get up and you're like, wow. So I think part of it is you have to be able to connect with people. You need to be willing to go for it also and put yourself out there and be on the line. But you also need to be in control of what's going on. I think of a storyteller like a tour guide, right? They pick you up somewhere. They take you through a journey where everyone changes and everyone grows and everyone gets to have fun or laugh or be serious or scared or whatever the tour is. And then they put you down somewhere. And the storyteller has to be the person who does that with you. You don't want a storyteller who is an unreliable narrator who picks you up and leaves you someplace and you're worse off than when you started the journey, or you're so bored you sleep through half of it. So crafting a story, someone who is willing to take the time to figure out how that story is going to work and what they're going to do with it, and also know why you're taking you on that journey. One of the things I love about watching Andy's work is he really has put a lot of thought and effort into how you get through a story and where you pick someone up, what's going to resonate with an audience, and what sort of things that the storytellers got for themselves in there. Every storyteller has jokes that nobody else thinks is funny that they think are funny. and they leave them in there, and you can always kind of catch them. And they, you know, they're your own person. You brought your own person to the story. So ultimately, what makes a good storyteller? Someone who's willing to put themselves out there, someone who's willing to work to connect with an audience, someone who has crafted the material for the audience they're performing for, and someone who is playing with an audience as you go. And that doesn't mean, of course, it's always funny. It just means you need to be aware of what the audience is doing, and you need to shift with them as you tell.
Yeah, and I'll throw in, I always expect my audience to be as smart as I hope they are. And I mean it. I mean, and so hope is the word. But one word about laughter, and Donna is masterful at this. She knows that what C.S. Lewis said, a children's story that's only interesting to children is not a good children's story in the slightest. Donna, watching her work with kids and watching her work with grown-ups feels the same. The material is different, of course, and there's grown-up stuff for the grown-ups, but it feels the same. And she is masterful at that. And I know she's only on radio, but to watch her is a delight as well.
Yeah. You both have very expressive faces. I would encourage our listeners to find your videos and watch, because it's a lot of fun to watch you, just like it's fun to listen to you. We're running short on time, but the Paris Story Fest is coming up. For anybody who's never been to a storytelling festival, what's it like, Andy?
Oh gosh, you get to be part of a community. There's no other kind of entertainment like this. Everybody's brains are engaged together, and it really is. It's a giant community thing where the performer and the audience have an equal share of the responsibility of what happens. There's nothing like it.
Do you participate in a lot of these, Donna?
I do probably about maybe 10 a year. Like I said, 90% of my work is with schools and education. But the thing that's cool about storytelling is the sort of definition of it is the storyteller tells the story, the audience is transformed by the story, and the audience transforms the story back to the storyteller, because we're all in real time and everything that's happening brings us together. So it's just pretty amazing.
Well, I've been talking with two amazing people, professional storytellers, Donna Washington and Andy Offutt Irwin. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you
Thank
so much, Lucy. It's been a pleasure, truly.
Hope to see everyone in Paris, Kentucky.
That's right. They will both be appearing at the Paris Story Fest in Paris, Kentucky. That's happening May 10th through the 12th. You can find a link to more information on our website, wbxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.